Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the New Books in Japanese Studies, a channel on the New Books Network. I'm Takeshi Morisato. Today, I'll be talking to Dr. Linda Ehrlich, who is the author of The Films of Koreeda Hirokazu, Elemental Cinema, a book that was just published in the East Asian Popular Culture Series in 2019 by Palgrave Macmillan. Hello, Linda.
Hello. It's nice to be here.
Thank you so much for joining us. And we are so excited to talk to you about your new book on Koreeda films. I'm actually a huge fan of his works and have been using some of them for my Japanese philosophy courses, for instance. But before getting into it, and also, you know, ask you about this, your reflections on these amazing pieces of art, I'd like to start with the question about who you are. Could you introduce yourself by telling us about your career, research, and how you are involved with this field of Japanese studies and film studies?
Well, Japanese studies happened almost by chance, to be honest. I had studied Spanish all my life, and I was chosen as a high school junior to be an American Field Service foreign student to Japan, and I was sent to Shikoku, to a small town in Shikoku where there were no other foreigners.
Wow.
Quite an immersion experience. And then I went back in college. I studied a year and a half at Waseda University. I lived a couple years in Kyoto. And although I've done other things, and I do some things with Spanish cinema as well, I keep coming back to Japan. And everywhere I travel, I meet people who are involved with Japan, Japanese cinema. So it's just a part of me. And I'm kind of reconciled to it now, and I'm always get excited when I can teach Japanese subjects. Now, all of my books are not about Japan, but this one certainly is.
What was the name of the town in Shikoku that you visited?
I lived in Sakaideshi.
Sakaideshi, wow. I don't know where. I've been to Shikoku for the study of pilgrimage, but I don't know the name of this town. So, wow. So you have complete immersion into Shikoku culture. Fantastic. So I would like to ask this. I have a list of questions that I like to ask you. But first, I'd like to ask how this book came to be. So from your, you know, work in film studies and, you know, your life work with Japan, how this book on Koreeda came to be, or what was your motivation behind this book?
Well, I wish I could say that I had planned this out in a very detailed way, but I can't. I wrote the review for Dari mo Shiranai, for Nobody Knows, for Film Quarterly.
Okay.
And then I wrote some other articles on Koreeda. I contributed to the 2011 film criticism double issue on him. And actually, I was able to give him that issue, that journal, when I interviewed him for the second time in Japan. And then I was also asked to do the commentary on the remastered DVD and Blu-ray of Maboroshi no Hikari, which was done by Milestone Film and Video. So I was doing all these odds and ends of articles and events about Koreeda. My My essay for Film Criticism looked at Corrieta's ocean views, his views of water. Mm-hmm. And after writing that, I realized, and after seeing The Third Murder, that I had to bring fire into my discussion. So I did. And that was for Framework, another film journal. Mm-hmm. And after that, I thought, well, you know, there's Erdal. So I really have to bring air into my discussion. And so as I'm saying this, I think you get an idea that it wasn't that I sat down and said, oh, I'm going to write a book about different elements in Corrieta's films. It just kept going like that. And then finally, I had a period in my life where I didn't have a lot of obligations. And then I thought, you know, I'm just going to write a book about Corrieta. And I thought I had a press. It turns out that that press, when I finished, wasn't really interested in the book. They found it too lyrical. And I, you know, had some moments of panic then. And then Palgrave Macmillan picked it up, and it was great working with them. So I'm really grateful to them for that.
Yeah, the book starts with the picture of you giving that precise volume to Corrieta. And also publisher did an amazing job inserting the cut from the films, so scenes.
Well, I do want to mention that because I was very pleased by the short tribute that a colleague from Miami put about the pictures. I did all of those pictures. They're all frame grabs, and I did them in a media lab in a public library. And I love working with images.
At this sort of explanation to the argument you're making or the points you're making, and you actually get to see that screen throughout the book. Yes.
Well, when the book was first printed by Palgrave, the images were all in black and white, and it looked terrible. The images were just way too muddy. And I think it's a miracle, but they were willing to reprint the whole book with color images at the same price. Now, the book is not cheap, unfortunately, but still, they didn't up the price for the color images. And although there are a few I wish were a little bit better, I'm awfully happy with the images. And my writing interacts with the images. So when anyone, you know, thinks of reprinting this or whatever, I always say, you've got to have the images in it. It's not just the text. It's an interaction. It's a dialogue between image and word in my book.
Yeah, it's definitely reminds you of the film that you actually watch with the Corrieta, and your sort of engagement with his works flow with this text and image throughout the book.
Well, thank you. And also, I wanted images that, as I say, were not the usual suspects. So although I included a few that were from Milestone or others that, you know, we've seen quite a bit, but I tried to find moments that were a bit more surprising. And so that viewers who've seen the films would say, oh, yes, you know, I never paid attention to that. And that was my goal for those images.
Yeah, it's definitely not the jacket covers or the sort of ostensive, you know, the representative part of the film, but it's just the sort of the passing images. Yeah. Also, I noticed that your book refers to many secondary sources, including articles and blog posts on Corrieta films. And I also noticed that you refer to many different languages. So not only usually, you know, Japanese studies book tend to focus on Japanese and English when it's done in English, but your book talks about Spanish and French and Portuguese and Italian receptions of Corrieta films. Can you tell us more about this sort of where you find these articles and how did you make the selection, as well as did you notice the differences among this different scenes, you know, European cultural scenes, that their reception of Corrieta?
Well, I was working in a fairly solitary way for a year, and I had to rely on the languages I could handle. I mean, I can't read Chinese, for example, and I don't know German well at all. So I stuck to the languages I know that I can read and understand well. And those were the ones that are in there. Portuguese is in there too, a little bit. And, you know, I just kept searching. I mean, every day I just kept searching for sources and writing. Fortunately, there's quite a bit from England. British Film Institute has done good work. Now, I'm well connected with Spanish film scholars who work in Japanese studies. So that was helpful to me. Mm-hmm. As I went back and looked at the book again this last week, I realized I didn't cite very much from French. I know I consulted them, but I'm afraid mm-hmm. French is not the presence that it should be in this book. Mm-hmm. But also very important to mention is that the first non-Japanese book about Corrieta is Italian. Mm-hmm. And it's by a writer, Claudia Bertolo. I've never mm-hmm. met her. It's from 2013.
Okay.
She does discuss every film up to that point in detail. Mm-hmm. And she has a very evocative introductory section to her book where she talks about like silent protagonists and, you know, just mm-hmm. rather abstract before she goes into a film by film analysis. So a colleague from here actually brought me that book from Italy. It was hard to get. And I'm kind of amazed that my book is now the second. I would expect a lot more. I know there's mm-hmm. one more coming out, but I think that he hasn't been written about as much as he deserves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he's one of the best film directors that are alive in Japan. And I always, you know, I'm always asked by my friends that I like Kurosawa movies and I like Oz movies. Would you recommend anything from Japanese films that I don't know? Then I usually recommend Koreeda. I would like to ask you about this sort of cultural elements in Koreeda films. You know, the typical Korean movies that are really well received among my European friends are usually like Father, Like Son, or Shoplifters in a recent, film. They are sort of like signature movie that people tend to say, oh, Korea is great because I watched this movie and that. But then when I think about other films like Kiseki and Our Little Sister, the cultural elements might be... including Still Walking, the cultural element is so specific in some way that might be very difficult for European audience to understand because, you know, they don't speak Japanese. Would you agree with that? Or do you have a different way to assess the sort of the cultural elements of Korea films?
Well, I definitely agree with it in terms of Our Little Sister. Mm-hmm. And I was looking at my chapter on that film, and I really need to expand it. I do talk in that one about a monogatari narrative style, sort of like the tale of Genji, you know, just a flowing mm-hmm. and a style where the narrative doesn't wrap up in some mm-hmm. precise way at the end. I think this is very Nihonteki. It's very mm-hmm. Japanese film, and it really has gone under the radar. It's not been commented on by many people, and even the great critics like Manola Dargis in New York Times or mm-hmm. Peter Bradshaw in The Guardian, they don't quite get that film, mm-hmm. whereas they get many of the others beautifully. I think that Like Father, Like Son has mm-hmm. been overrated. It's my least favorite of the Corrieta films. Mm-hmm. I find it far too intellectual in a way. It's an interesting idea. It was also made into a film the same year in Israel, where it was mm-hmm. an Israeli boy and a Palestinian boy who were switched at birth. But mm-hmm. I don't feel any great involvement in that film, except for Lily Frankie's performance, which I think is charming.
Yeah.
The other thing about that film might be that the child actors are not on the level of most of Corrieta's child actors who are absolutely superb. And that's That's because of Corrieta's very skillful work with children. He is mm-hmm. exemplary in that way. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, Shoplifters seem to have touched an international chord. And mm-hmm. So I don't know. I mean, I go in depth about different Japanese aspects of all of these films. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure if you couldn't appreciate the films without knowing that or not. I think Mabaroshi is one that you need to know a lot mm-hmm. about Japan and about Miyamoto Teru, the original novelist. But mm-hmm. Still, people can appreciate it for its visual beauty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, That's absolutely true. Yeah. And you mentioned some of the scenes that are reminiscent of old painting technique of Japanese painting. And yeah, that's fantastic observation of these films. Now, so you mentioned this shoplifter. So I want to a little bit jump forward. So I think you mentioned in the book that the shoplifter is a sort of a consummation of all the films that Koreeda has been making. It's a kind of closing chapter of all the things he's been experimenting or the, all the themes that he's been exploring. And so shoplifters definitely won the best prize and sort of like international recognition. Would you agree with that assessment, or your understanding of shoplifters is slightly different from, for instance, some, you know, general understanding of Koreeda films, because they tend to put the like father, like son pretty much high up. You know, and then shoplifters even better. So that would be my question.
Yeah, you have to remember that when I finished writing the book, and as you know, one always finishes writing a book long before it actually gets published. I mean, there's there's the whole proofreading part. I had not seen La Vérité, the truth, mm-hmm. is one that is in France. Yeah. I only have like two paragraphs. There's a mistake in one of the paragraphs, even.
Oh, I didn't know. Okay. Yeah.
So I will say, I think that Shoplifters is an end to a certain kind of, a certain aspect of his career. Mm-hmm. And now we're moving into another, which looks like it's taking place in other countries for a mm-hmm. while.
Yeah.
I think Shoplifters is a very fine film. It's mm-hmm. a marvelous film. But mm-hmm. is it worth all the hype? I'm not so sure about
it. I see. Wow.
It's a great
interesting.
Ensemble performance. I love the acting. The mm-hmm. everyone works together in that film in a beautiful right. way. It's a yeah. brave film because, of course, he says it's not a political film, but I mean, really, you know, mm-hmm. it points yeah. out a lot of fissures in Japanese society.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For me, his greatest film is Nobody Knows.
Mm.
I just feel that there's something endlessly touching about that film. And, mm-hmm. I've studied how he made it and... I don't know. I just think it's a really a strong film. Another great one is Afterlife.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So maybe I'd like to ask you some more focus themes in these films. And the first one I'd like to ask is this, the Koreeda's tendency to focus on this sort of between status of people. So children is a kind of between birth to the, you know, the adulthood, for instance. Or he talks about sort of a betweenness of things in modern Japan. And I think this concept is very rich in terms of symbolism, and we can certainly draw many implications from it. But can you elaborate a bit more on this aspect of betweenness in the works of Koreeda that you mentioned in this book? And why is it important for understanding his films, and why does this seem to be so valuable for Koreeda as a director of these beautiful films?
Mm-hmm. Well, I do put a whole section about liminality, and that came
exactly, yeah.
rather late, as I couldn't mm-hmm. quite figure out where to put a couple of the films in the schema that was developing of mm-hmm. elements. And I realized that my examples... many of them were about death, a lot mm-hmm. of liminal space, the funeral pyre by the sea in Mabaroshi, that magnificent long take, and the forest setting in Distance, which is another film that, although it's not perhaps perfect, is well worth seeing. The airport burial scene in Nobody Knows. These are all liminal spaces,
mm-hmm.
and the people who inhabit it are also liminal within Japanese society. They're not, they're not like established politicians or established in any one profession so much. I mean, look at like After the Storm, you know, mm-hmm. protagonist is kind of nowhere I mean, he was a good novelist, but then he really fell off from that. I think these are the people who intrigue Corrieta. I don't, you know, he said like he could not write a film about like a typical dad kind of film. This is what interests him. And as we look at, I don't do biographical work so much, but if we look at, you know, how he grew up in kind of a liminal sort of family and part of Japan and part of Tokyo. And of course the quintessential liminal space is the way station in Afterlife. I never know why a director chooses anything, frankly, but I do know how I react as a viewer and how other reviewers have commented. And I think you're absolutely right. This is crucial to who Corrieta is. And of course, the people in Shoplifters are neither here nor there. You know, they are working, but they're not making enough.
Right.
And they're living in, they're sort of camping out in this house that's that's neither part of the past nor part of the present, because it's going to be torn down as soon as the grandmother dies. I mean, it is a sense of instability in many of his films. I don't think his films are like really sweet, by the way. I think they are somewhat nostalgic,
right?
Very compassionate, but they're a bit cynical as well.
Right. Yeah. I mean, After the Storm does definitely have this ending that it's a kind of resolution, but also it's not resolving anything. And there's a sense that maybe all the problems that the protagonist is having is will recur again. So we don't really know where the story is going. And, you know, nobody knows. Starts with the ending of the one of the death of the children, which is shocking, and it's based on the facts. But at the same time, it's quite uplifting, regardless of the fact that this is the most, you know, horrendous incident that happened in the history, which intrigued the director to actually make this film. So there's a kind of ambivalence, you know, and this liminality that you focus actually kind of at this sort of dynamic interrelations of these elements, I feel like.
And I can't remember when I decided to put in a chapter about endings, but I really do like that chapter, I have to say. And had to choose those images very carefully. The press was generous with the number of images, but I had to cut it down from 200 to 68. So there was a lot of horse trading of images there for a while.
Well, it does have this sort of references to these bits and pieces of almost a film memory. You know, when we talk about film after watching the film, you know, we have this discussion, do you remember that scene, this happened? And I think that means this. So it does have that.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. And this is the part I really like. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning. You simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor is the solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. Head to factormeals.com/NBN50 and use code NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code NBN50 at factormeals.com/NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
My dream is to have all 200 images in some version of this book at some time. I don't know if it will happen. But the endings, as I sort of group them together, and in that chapter I go chronologically.
Right.
I realize, you know, how much they really are unresolved. And that can be hard for a Western viewer. I mean, you know, there was a film called Limbo where things ended in limbo. And that sure was not, that was, you know, an English language film. That sure was not popular among viewers. But in many ways, Corrieta leaves us in limbo in almost every Including the truth. I mean, the truth is a smaller film. It's got huge actors and actresses in it, but a smaller story. But it also ends up rather unresolved, I think.
Mm. I mean, I think you mentioned something about the length of his films in relation to Nobody Knows, and you discuss how some people feel that movie is too long, but you mentioned how the characters, the type of life that children would have to go through, what kind of time frame they're living. And I thought that was very insightful to show that how Koreeda is a little bit of this sort of inner reflections of the characters dictates the whole framework. So it's not really about the viewers' likes and dislikes of the movies, but rather than the character's development in his film. Yeah.
Well, that film, you have to really be immersed in it. I mean, you cannot watch it while you're multitasking. That would be really horrible thing.
And that's probably how to neglect the children in the movie themselves, right? That if you started to multitask and think about yourself and... with this ending, and also you mentioned this afterlife, so I'd like to ask you this question about this movie called Afterlife. I find this movie actually far more intellectual than other films. Perhaps other films is much more emotional and lyrical in some ways, but I felt Afterlife was quite philosophical, and I've seen some film studies specialists use this film as a sort of a philosophy of film. So what's the purpose of making a film? So I want to ask you a question about this film. Why would you put this as one of the best films? And also the ending, it's very strange ending. It's one of the protagonists actually gets resolved, but the memory that he chooses is the limbo. So the character ends with the resolution, which is a film director in a way, but he's also kind of stuck in the production memory. Can you share some of your thoughts on this movie and its ending?
Well, you know, after Koreeda made Mabaroshi, which I do find an exquisite movie, he decided he didn't really like the style he had imposed on Mabaroshi. I think one impetus for that was the Taiwanese director Ho Shao-shin suggested to him that maybe it was overly controlled.
I see.
So then when he decided to do Afterlife, he told his cinematographers, let's choose a style that's somewhere between feature filmmaking and documentary filmmaking. I do think, yes, I think it's an intellectually fascinating film. I find it rather emotionally compelling as well. And I think that what Arata, the actor Mochizuki, the character, when he finally chooses a memory, and don't forget, he's been a counselor for decades, you know, we find that out as the film goes on. He chooses a memory of being with others, of working with others. And then he leaves, and then the week starts again. And so there's a kind of endless loop to this film. And yes, there are great essays about afterlife. This one allows very detailed analysis, whereas some of the others do not.
It seems like Koreeda, you know, I remember the making of this film, how he just started to ask the actors about their, you know, the same question as the characters would ask them in the movie. So he started to film people responding to these questions of the question of, well, if you were to take one memory to the next life, what's the memory you would take? And I heard that he actually used these demo tapes into a film. So there's a kind of ambivalent boundary between documentary and filmmaking
Well, absolutely. I mean, particularly in this film, and you know that I think about 10 of the people who appear as the so-called newly deceased, they're like real people. Like they're not actors, you know, and they're talking about their own memories. And so the memories of World War II and hardships And then you have these actors listening to them. So it's just, Tony Raines has said that afterlife is like a Chinese puzzle box. And I think that's a good description. He's a film critic from England. Yeah, it's a really cool film. And yet, Corrieta never stays in one style. He goes on to make other kinds of films after that. Distant, a highly improvised film, you know. And then Nobody Knows, of course, he's working with children. So he has to have pretty good idea where he's going with that. But he he followed the children in some of the scenes, you know, sort of as they went, he went with them in the film. And then after making such a tragic film, he decides he wants to make a comedy. And even though it's not a great film, Hana Yori Monal, it's got some very fine features to it.
Yeah, definitely.
You know?
Yeah. It was really interesting to read that you actually interviewed Corrieta about some of the films. When was this interview took place?
Oh, I'm trying to remember now. Well, the second one was 2011 because I handed him that journal.
Right. So several times you had a...
Yeah, the first one was a couple of years before that. And I would love to get back now and interview him again. He's a very kind person. He doesn't blink. That was one of my first impressions of him.
Yeah.
He's guarded. I mean, I think if I go back now, I'd really like to go out and drink some sake with him and then we'll talk. And I would love to see the filming, which I have never been able to do.
There's a really funny scene in the book that you interviewed him about this afterlife. And you kept pushing him to answer the questions of, but why one memory?
Yeah.
And then his response was, hidoi.
Yeah, hidoi. That's what he's...
it's almost like he's one of the characters that didn't really have a choice about this one memory. Yeah,
that's what he says, that if he were one of those newly deceased, he'd probably become a counselor because he couldn't choose one memory. But I've chosen my memory, so I know what it is. People ask me that, and, you know... And why only one? I have been pondering that. One thing I will say about Corrieta is that I feel he is very, very clear in what he's doing and what he wants. I did have a dialogue with him about the English title, Nobody Knows. I didn't think it was strong enough. And, you know, he just, that's what he wanted, you know? I mean, it's a direct translation. Whereas some of the titles in English are different, as you...
Right, yeah.
What is that? Umi Yorimo Mada Fukaku for after. Very different, you know.
Yeah, very different. Yeah. It's
so he knows what he wants. He knows what he wants. And that's, I mean, he's really kind of taught himself how to make films in many ways. He learned as a documentary filmmaker for television. And I'm very sad that his documentaries are not available. And apparently there are some rights issues. I don't know the details, but I love his film, Life with a Calf, the very first one he did.
Yeah, I've never seen it, but it sounds really fantastic and laid the foundation for his capacity to work well with the children and ask this question of life, almost. Yeah. I've seen his Men Without Memory, the documentary about the main character, main person, Hiroshi, is incapable of constructing the memory thanks to the medical malpractice. But it definitely sort of gives Corrieta the impetus to work on this notion of memory in afterlife. And one of the things that really strikes me is really interesting about these two films is that he seemed to be questioning what counts as memory and how is that is sort of constitutive or maybe unrelated to filmmaking. You know, one of the characters in Afterlife, he couldn't choose, so they requested like a VCR of the entire life. I mean, that's the funniest part, that he's actually watching himself his whole life and he has to choose. But do you think, I guess, for Corrieta, memory has to have some sort of like emotional engagement? you know, the man without memory, it turned out that he could remember things that has much more emotional content. So maybe he's working with this notion of how the emotion should play out as the strong elements of films, perhaps.
I think so. I know that in terms of the truth, I mean, he doesn't speak French, and the actresses, Catherine Deneuve, Juliette Binoche, they do speak English, but I'll tell you, I don't think he speaks English, because we certainly did not correspond in any way in English, but they did find meeting points when they talked, when they were able to talk through a translator about French cinema. Mm-hmm. So cinema became their memory, became their point of communication.
I see.
I think films are repositories of memories and emotions for him. Mm-hmm. So even though I do say there is a cynicism, it's never like totally dark at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's so many things that I would like to ask you about this sort of Kore-eda's method of making, because it seems like some of the movies in some of the interviews, he talked about how he chose the scenes, you know, like you chose 200 image grabs, right, for this book. So, I mean, as a director, he probably shot way longer than actual movie itself. And he mentioned something like some of the scenes are constructed on the site. So he's shooting children having interactions and kind of give them a general directions, but nobody really knows the entire architect of the movie. And he sees their interactions, and sometimes he even changed the plot to fit with their interaction. Is that a normal thing in filmmaking, or is it peculiar to his style?
I don't think it's peculiar to his style at all, okay. Although there's the other extreme, which is the Hitchcock or the Kurosawa.
Right. Right.
You know, have storyboarded the film, and that's the film. And but Kore-eda's open, very open. I think the weakness perhaps of a film like The Third Murder is, as I understand it, he was like rewriting it all the time, even as they're filming it. So there's an uncertainty in it, which I find really exciting. But some people who like the crime genre more than I do say it doesn't really hold up. Mm-hmm. But that, I do think he's open to changes. I know that he edits as he goes along, which is not what every director does, and every director doesn't edit either, you know, necessarily.
Right.
But he does apparently rewrite quite a bit. Now, I did my dissertation on Mizoguchi, and I had the honor of interviewing Yoda Yoshikata, who was one of his main screenwriters. And I know that Mizoguchi drove the actors crazy. I mean, they would arrive on the set in the morning, and they would have new lines to learn. And poor Yoda-sensei was just long-suffering, because he could be writing lines at 3 a.m, you know. That's kind of a fanatical.
Right.
I think Kore-eda takes a lot more of it onto himself. Mm-hmm. Remember,
he writes his own films, right?
Yeah. He's the screenwriter and he's the editor. So he does a lot of it himself. He doesn't do the music. And the music is, in my view, is kind of minor in his films.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they don't play the front row of the films. Yeah. So I would like to ask so many symbolisms. I haven't even started asking these questions, but one of the things that really stood out from your book is this emptiness or the vessels in Kore-eda films. You know, for instance, you mentioned this use of the bucket in Nobody Knows, and how the Third Murder, which is the modern Rashomon, I totally agree with that assessment of that movie. And it presents this sort of the main character as the vessel, right? And it kind of reveals this deadness of the justice system, you know, that nobody really seemed to have any idea of whether or not this guy has actually killed somebody, or he's, you know, is he a hero? Is he a criminal? Or is he, you know, so you kind of put in this really strange position. And then you have this most beautiful, you know, air doll, beautiful story about this empty doll, which reveals the emptiness of society. What does Koreeda try to achieve through reflecting on these different manifestations of like emptiness or voice, you call it, or sometimes you mention it as the air? What is he trying to do with this image?
Well, I think it ties into the liminality theme in that the emptiness is not empty. It's actually very, very full. It's very rich. And I'm not saying here that he's going to Zen Buddhist views or anything like that. It's just Misumi in The Third Murder is described by that form, by that retired police officer as an empty vessel.
Right.
But he isn't. There's something very rich about this man's personality and what he may have done out of a service to others. But again, that's never really solved.
Right.
But especially in Airdal, yes, she's empty. She's just plastic and air. But of course, she becomes something much more than that. So the potential to be full is great. And I think as shoplifters as well, these people are poor, but they're rich.
And
those scenes of sitting around, the kotatsu and eating together are just heartwarming. And these are people who really don't have much, and they've stolen probably most of the stuff that they're eating. But there's still a warmth and a richness to them that is totally lacking in the people who are more full, like Aki's parents when the grandmother goes to visit them, you know. So I think he's saying, let's not be tricked by surface appearances. Let's look deeper. And that's how he uses emptiness, I think.
There's, you know, you said there's no social critique that is intended by the director, but there's an element of a strong critique, or at least, you know, sort of the encouragement towards self-reflection. For instance, The Third Murder, when you're watching this character being detained, but at one point it looks like he's the one judging us to the justice system rather than justice system is judging him. You know, then Airdal is presented as a doll or the tool for the, you know, sexual relationship, for instance, but then kind of role reverses and how the human society is actually empty.
Right, exactly. She's so the only one who's like...
Yeah. So he seemed to have this sort of, use this sort of space as this moment in which we can reflect on ourselves or the way we organize our lives. And even if we look at the shoplifters, it makes us question of what constitutes family. For instance, you know, we tend to hold on to this idea that we are just born into the house, you grow up, that's the family. But it really challenges this, conventional understanding of what counts as a family.
Right. I mean, look at the little girl's abusive mother. You know, that's her birth mother. So, you know, I'm afraid sometimes mothers take a pretty hard hard role in Koreeda's films, you know, the absent mother or the grandmother who will never forgive and so on. But I think that with shoplifters, of course, Koreeda was in a very difficult position afterwards. I mean, he was accused of being anti-Japanese. He was accused of misusing a grant that he had gotten from the government, and he defended himself beautifully. And perhaps I'm influenced by some of his statements at that time when I say that he doesn't set out to critique the society. It's just he sets out to tell a story. And, you know, he's a great storyteller, I think.
The critique was that he presented this not beautiful picture of Japan. That was the problem.
Right, that was, and you know, and then it won, and then it embarrassed the government by winning the top prize at Cannes. And then he was invited to go to one of the ministries to receive congratulation, and he refused.
Right, he didn't show up to the ceremony, basically.
He didn't show up. I mean, because he said, I don't want my films to be connected with politics in that way. He pointed to World War II, where, you know, with the censorship, the Japanese censors, films had to have a certain propagandistic bent. So he just doesn't want that. And he has a blog where he writes very beautifully, I think. Mm-hmm. But he also writes that he says, I have made a film about people who are so-called invisible, and mm-hmm. we need to see them, you know.
Right.
So, yes, it is a critique, of course, but I don't think it's anti-Japan at all. I think this is a great service of the cinema to point out these figures in society. They're not always fun to look at, but we need to see them. They can't.
Yeah, there are, you know, several amazing implications from that film. But also, I'd like to ask you this, Koreeda's philosophy of writing stories and making films about these smaller narratives rather than this larger political narrative. So he says something like, in ancient times, you know, people make these narratives so epic, but it was so politically motivated that sacrifices the, you know, invisible people, basically, right? That you have this larger narrative that sacrifices these minorities. So it's a form of resistance, he said, that to write these films.
That's right.
Yeah,
Shoplifters is a Chiesana monogatari, and he a small story, and he actually did not think it should go to Cannes. He thought it was too small of a story. That Cannes Film Festival tends to look at larger stories for some reason. I'm glad that he was persuaded to finally send it.
Yeah, not to mention he won, so he should have sent it. So this actually, you know, comes back to this sort of a irresistible comparison between Koreeda and Ozu films. I recently interviewed this author who wrote a book on Ozu, and, you know, the typical criticism of Ozu cuts in both ways. Like, he writes these shoshimin, small, you know, Japanese life stories, and, you know, people ask, why are you keep making these same film? And his response was that I can only make tofu. You know, this is my craft, that's it. Do you think Koreeda is doing the same thing? Or he's quite distinct from Ozu? I mean, I remember him saying that my influence is not from Ozu, somebody else. But it just seems there's a strong parallel that many people tend to focus. Would you agree with that?
Well, I think it would be good to resist the comparison to Ozu, actually.
Okay.
I think Ozu is great. Ozu was one of a kind. And I do mention Ozu in terms of some of his lesser known films, like Record of a Tenement Gentleman. That's also about a homeless child.
Right.
And maybe Hen in the Wind, which is a pretty harsh film, where Tanaka Kinio gets tossed down the stairs by her angry husband. And, you know, so that's an Ozu people don't know as well. I think the only film that's a little bit like Ozu might be Still Walking, because it is about more of a slightly more upper class family, you know, the late, in other words. I think that Koreeda is very much like Ken Loach, the British filmmaker Ken Loach. Mm-hmm. And I do mention Kes, the film Kes about the boy who trains the hawk. I mentioned that film in my chapter on Nobody Knows.
Right.
And another film, I don't mention it, I think, in the book, but I, Daniel Blake. And now he's just come out with a film about people who deliver, like for Amazon and all. It's like, sorry, I missed you, I think.
Yeah.
I think he's a lot like Ken Loach in that he tells stories about people who are a bit hard on their luck, but have real human virtues. More than Ozu. Ozu is just Ozu, you know?
I think
in some ways that Koreeda is a tofu maker as well in that sense. Mm-hmm. But you had asked me what kind of food.
I wanted to ask you, like, what kind of, if you were to, you know, use the same parallel, what would be the dish that you would describe Koreeda films?
Well, I thought about that. And of course, the first thing that came to my mind was the corn tempura and Still Walking that his mother had made. But that's not quite right.
Okay.
I think it's a nabe mono. Films are nabe mono. They're a mixture. They're not pretentious, but there's something that people can gather around and feel warmth from.
Mm-hmm. I see. So there's a kind of a gathering of different ingredients and sort of see what happens, a little bit of a mixture of different elements.
Mm-hmm. But not fancy ingredients. This
right.
is shabu shabu. This is mm-hmm. simple.
This is a nave, the sashimi nave.
That's right. See. Yes. Okay.
Perhaps like that would take me to this sort of notion of ma or interval that, you know, Ozu is known for this sort of using the space as much as kind of rigid framework. But Koreeda definitely seem to have this focus on this notion of interrelations or intervals between individuals or, you know, or things even in Japanese society. So, you know, when I teach Japanese philosophy, we talk about how this notion of nakama or aidagara, the betweenness that defines our identity, comes from, you know, East Asian Buddhist intellectual traditions. So in a way, the identities of individuals are defined by their interaction with each other rather than who they are. But then on the other hand, it seems like some of the movies like Father and Like Son, or even Erdal, has this sort of crave for this objective self-identity that is not dependent upon interactions. You know, then you have this sort of two sides. We've been talking about how things are not as straightforward in Korea, that one side is seem to be doing one thing, but it means something else. So there's a conflict between this sort of selfless care of the other for the other among the individuals that constitute their self-identity, but they also have this sort of self-centered nature. So nobody is the perfect, and nobody is absolutely evil in Koreeda's films. Can you, do you think this is sort of one of the primary concerns that Koreeda has in his films?
Yes, I don't think anyone is purely evil. I do think that the abusive mother of Yuri comes about as close to purely evil. We don't, but we haven't really filled in her backstory there. So that,
right.
But even the mother in Nobody Knows, played by you, Koreeda has said in interviews that he thought that she was not evil to leave
right.
her, that she must have had some love for them. You know, and so, yes, I do think there's no purely good or purely evil. And I think what's compelling for me about the third murder is because it's Yakusho Koji, it's such a superb actor playing Sumi, that we see him wanting to connect with others, but having been hurt so often throughout his life in that. And I think that makes us feel that he's not an evil person.
Right.
I think everyone, I really have to put Like Father, Like Son aside because I just can't warm up to that film very much. But certainly Erdal, I think it's so important to her relationships. She wants to relate to everybody. You know, he said to her, don't play the Erdal like a puppet. Play her like a baby who's just being born to the world, you know?
Right.
And she's out and she wants to talk to these young mothers with their babies. And of course, they're scared of her, you know? She wants to be connected to everything. And of course, at the end, in a way, she is with, although, you know, I mean, sort of a spoiler here, but I mean, not she herself, but with the dandelion fluffs that go and touch all the people who have been around her. So,
right.
And that is based on a manga, so it's not purely his own idea, but a lot of that film was his own idea. I think that the Ma, and this was an idea I got from a Spanish film scholar, Luis Miranda, and he and I both wrote for the Las Palmas Film Festival catalog. It was an early retrospective of Koreeda's films. And he talked about three aspects of Koreeda's films. He said observation, interval or ma, and brushstroke. And brushstroke for him was the gestures, because there's so many telling gestures in Koreeda's films. The ma is, I think, what we've spoken about, both the liminality, the emptiness that's full, and as you just said very well, the aidagara, the connection between people and people and objects. And don't forget, like the bicycle bell in Mabaroshi, you know, that objects stand in for people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's no division between humans over here and things over there, but there's sort of mixture or interactions between them that almost like talking to each other. One of the things that this small focus on, you know, let's say civil life, the, you know, working class life, the Koreeda is paying attention to, or sometimes even the lower class in the shoplifters, but he seemed to have very strong focus on suffering. And I remember one of these interviews, he said that I don't want to treat one person's suffering differently than another. The tendency to, do you think that is one of the reasons why we don't really have quite absolute evil character or absolutely good characters in Koreeda films, but somehow these sharing of suffering binds them and almost make them even compassionate human being? You know, for instance, the relationship between two mothers and like father and like son.
Right.
Or
that's
the,
a good one. Yes.
You know, the little girl from the shoplifters and mother.
Right.
You know, take a bath together and sort of like looking at each other, the scars.
Right.
Well, it's not her mother.
It's the mother role in the makeshift family. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, but she plays like a mother. I mean, that's the very poignant aspect of shoplifters. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely empathy. Empathy is important to him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's kind of sort of, you know, when you watch the movie with the subtitles, sometimes they give you away the lines. The shoplifters, for instance, have these scenes where, I think you mentioned the scenes where the characters actually say thank you to each other or call each other names, but we don't hear it. But subtitles actually gives away that she said thank you. But there's a kind of unspoken foundations or invisible connections among these characters in Koreeda's films.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, I helped a little bit with the subtitles of Mabaroshi's, the remastered Mabaroshi, and it's tough. It's tough to do. In Shoplifters, of course, what we miss are when they're calling each other those relational words, you know, you know, Oni-san, you know, or
right.
and so on. And the original title, as I understand it, of Shoplifters was something like Say It Aloud, Koe ni Dashite, or something like that, because that's really what the father and mother role figures want. They want to be called father and mother, but the children really are not able to do that. You know, subtitles are good, but they leave out a great deal. And just to say a funny story about that, I'm maybe going off on a tangent, but...
No, please.
Excuse me. There was one line in Mabaroshi, I just couldn't figure out what to do. And that was when Yumiko arrives in Sosogi, and it's, you know, it's kind of an out-of-the-way place, and her new husband says to her, Nani mo nai tokoro desu, you know, and I thought, well, you can't just say there's nothing here, because of course there's a lot there. There's an ocean and there's a town and all that. And I just couldn't come up with anything. And the woman who was the main subtitler came up with, it's a real backwater, isn't it? And I thought, that's great. That's really good, you know?
Yeah.
And that's how hard it is to subtitle, because you almost have to get to the gist by ignoring the real Japanese words.
Right. The literal meanings just don't convey any of that what he's actually saying. Yeah, that is one of the difficulty of translating. One of the distinct features of this book, I felt from reading, it's not a typical film studies, you know, book where they just focus on one theme. Either chronologically, you go through the whole films and just tell you, you know, central theme that they're working on. But it's kind of lyrical engagement, right? That you engage with the Koreeda films. Can you tell us more about this sort of special characteristics of your book?
Well, it just happened that way as I kept writing. And I've written some things that were a little bit like it in the past, but this is much more extremely that way. Yeah. I do write poetry. I'm a published poet. And it's just the way I view life now. And also, I thought it was a good way to write about Cordieda. I hope someday he can read it in Japanese, because I'd like to get his impression. It rings true for me. Now, unfortunately, it doesn't ring true for every reader, I don't think, or every critic or every press.
Right.
But, you know, it rings true for me. And in terms of the Spanish cinema, I wrote about Victor Erice, who did A Spirit of the Beehive and Dream of Light. Again, a very poetic filmmaker, not as prolific as Cordieda. So I guess I'm drawn to this kind of filmmaking. And I want the writing to reflect the tone of the films.
Right.
And when I did the commentary for Mabaroshi, that was very important for me. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I even put in periods of silence in the commentary, the full-length commentary, and decided later to go back and re-record those like 10 minutes or so, because the audio technician said he didn't think that so much silence was good. But to me, that was, you know, part of the beauty of the film. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's how I want to do it. Now, that commentary was criticized by one critic, saying it was lacking in context. And I think that is, frankly, pretty dumb. What it was is that I follow the film in its tone, and I introduce context, but I don't say right from the start, this is what the film is about.
Yeah.
This is how the film is constructed. And so in a way, though I'm not Japanese by birth, I'm being a little bit Japanese style there, I think, because I'm being suggestive rather than didactic.
Right. So the book doesn't really say this is the central theme of this book, and then lay out the theoretical foundations and references to these other theories about the film, but it just tells you, it's almost like a Koreeda style of the emotional memory, that in a way, if you watch these films, this is how you actually experience. So it's quite a bit of a poetic work, and I realized quickly, I quickly realized that I shouldn't read it as, you know, biographical work or, you know, the typical theoretical work that actually just lays out the method or the content, but it's much more emotionally engaging in a way.
Oh, well, thank you. It's really good to hear. And yet I draw in a great deal of scholarship. I mean, there's like 25 pages of bibliography, and it's not padded, you know?
Right. It's pretty huge. I'm actually glad that it was a bibliography, because the length of the book is quite hefty. If you go into the details that it's grounded in this scholarship, then I haven't seen, you know, a book that refers to more than one or two sources, the language, source languages. So it was quite a bit of a surprise to me that the level of engagement in the scholarship, but also this creativity that you put into this book.
Well, you know, you do these things, and then when you go back to them, like some months later, you think, wow, how did I do this?
You know? Performative elements. Probably that's how Koreeda is feeling about some of these films as well.
I think so too.
Well, thank you so much, Linda. Since we're approaching the end of the interview, I'd like to ask you about your plans for the future. What are you working on right now, and what's your future research or writing agendas?
Well, you know, also I want to thank you. This has really been a delight for me. I've, in terms of future plans, I have co-edited a book with Rebecca Copeland of Washington University, and it's called Yamamba, In Search of the Japanese Mountain Witch. I honestly didn't want to use the word witch, but, you know, the press wants it because it's kind of sexy.
Right.
And that'll come out through Stonebridge Press, and that has many different kinds of poetry and essays, and it's just a really great group of writing by lots of people. I myself am exploring the films of Yakusho Koji, and very much want to interview him if I can. I've certainly about The Third Murder and Shall We Dance and others.
Sure.
And I'm also going back to my training at the University of Hawaii for my PhD, which was in Asian theater. Okay. And I'm looking at shadow puppetry in many different forms. Sometimes I need to take a little break from the cinema, but of course, even, you know, shadow and light is an essential part of the cinema as well.
Mm-hmm. I see. Well, I'm really looking forward to the fruits of these publications, and hopefully we will have a chance to talk with you again for these books. I'm pretty sure they are pretty huge projects that will come out as great books. So thank you so much for talking to us about your book and your great insight into the works of Koreeda today, Nina.
こちらこそ. It was really, really a lot of fun.
And thank you, everyone. This was our discussion with Linda Ehrlich, who is the author of The Films of Koreeda Hirokazu, an Elemental Cinema. See you next time.